Jesus, why are you doing anything today? I mean, like, when I read the Bible, I see you do these incredible things, you know, like raising the dead and healing the sick and feeding the 5,000.
Right.
Why doesn't that kind of stuff happen today?
Well, Drew, things are still happening all around you.
I'm not seeing it. Like, for example, I'm thirsty and I want some water. Do you have any water for me?
Well,
of course you don't. See, this is what I'm talking about. It's like you don't even care about me.
No, Drew, things are still happening, even today. You just need to pay attention.
Okay.
Hey, Drew, I just went to the store and they're having a buy one, get one free. What? You want a water?
Yeah.
Okay, enjoy.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Huh?
Mmm.
That's great.
That is great.
Now, you didn't have the water.
Right.
Then you had it. Boom.
I know, it's so lucky that cat walked by, you know, with two for one.
Did you say lucky?
Well, yeah.
No, Drew, you didn't have the water.
Right.
You needed it. Then you had it. You see how that works?
Huh? Oh, I see what you're doing. Oh, I'm so rude. I'm sorry. Hey, Kathleen, thank you so much for the water. Appreciate it. Now, would you show me something amazing?
Amazing?
Yeah, I want to see amazing things, you know? Like Moses parting the Red Sea. That was amazing, right? How about the next time I'm stuck in traffic, I hit the steering wheel, the cars will split, and I cruise on through. That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
I have a better idea. Keep your eyes open.
Okay. Excuse me.
Yes.
Hey. You dropped your
wallet. Thank you.
Sure, no problem. Okay, show me something amazing.
Yes,
amazing.
Of course.
Right. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't take anything from my wallet.
Whoa, I'm not a thief, right?
No.
No, you dropped your wallet, I picked it up and gave it back to you. Droppy, picky, givey. No takey.
I know, you know, thanks for your honesty. Here's 20 bucks.
What? Wait, hold on. She just gave me $20 for counteracting gravity? That's amazing.
Yes, that is amazing.
Oh, man. How awesome. Now, would you show me something big?
Excuse me?
Show me something big.
Drew, how can I expect you to see me in the big things when you can't even see me in the little things?
That's a good question, isn't it? How do you expect to see in the big things when we can't even see God in the little things? So we are in week 6 of this exploration of our faith series. And well, we are trying to figure out these things that are missing. And so far, we have quite a list that we need to investigate. I mean, sometimes we're missing trust. Sometimes we're missing submission. Sometimes we're missing obedience. Sometimes we're missing the acceptance or forgiveness. And sometimes we are missing authenticity. Now, all of these things kind of have something in common. For the most part, these are inward things. We're going to switch gears over the last 3 weeks of this sermon series, and we're going to talk about things that just are a little bit more, shall we use the word, visible to us, things that we can see that maybe we're missing. They're not internal, they are external. And well, because we're talking about things that are visible, maybe we should discuss the fact that sometimes what we are missing is we are missing vision. Now, if you go, and you know how this series works now, we go and we got to figure out what it is we're talking about. When I say the word vision, it is the faculty or state of being able to see. So this is an important thing because it's about the here and now. I look out here today, and as long as I have my glasses on, I can see you. If I take my glasses off, you're fuzzier than that picture was on the screen. I mean, even Margaret's fuzzy, and she's sitting close. Actually, yeah, you're fuzzy too. If I take my glasses off, really, I can't see anything. I have a lack of vision because I just can't see. Now, vision is also the ability to think about, plan the future with imagination or wisdom. So vision is not just about the ability to see the here and now. The second thing it's about the ability to plan for the future. I see where I am now. I know how I get there, so I want to have a vision for how I'm going to get there. We do a vision sermon every single year. We have a vision emphasis every single year. This year is Living Faith. So this idea of vision isn't just about the here and now. It is absolutely positively about the future also. But here's the thing. Those two kinds of physical vision isn't necessarily exactly where I'm headed with this. You see, where I'm really headed with this is the failure to see God. Now, think about Drew's conversation here for just a minute. Drew wants to see amazing things. Drew wants to see God do things in such a way, but yet he is struggling with the idea of how do you go about seeing God? I mean, Azariah talked about it in his time. Sometimes we get so focused on all the things that are going wrong in our day, we miss the things that are going right. Sometimes we get so hurt and so obsessed with ourselves that we miss the fact that God never stopped working. I want God to do amazing things. But you know what? I think God wants to see something from me as well. So we're going to talk about this idea of vision and the idea that Drew could not see what God was really doing because he was looking for more than what God was putting out there for him to see. And so when we begin to talk about this, we're going to begin talking about looking for God in the big experience, because that's what we're all looking for. And so you probably already figured out where we're headed story-wise today. After all, it was in the video. We started out with Moses. As you're leaving today, if you would like to look at my parted, I guess we'll have to call that the Black Sea, at my parted sea, you understand where we're going. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 14, verses 29 through 31, and we're going to be talking about one of the biggest miracles that God ever did. But then we're going to take a look at how Israel missed it because they couldn't see God. So this is the story, in case you're not familiar with it. Let me read the story as it's played out in the Bible. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved the Israelites from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him, and Moses, his servant. So we have this episode when they get to the Red Sea, and we know how this goes. They're leaving Egypt, and they wander around, and we'll have a little deeper in the story. And they get to the Red Sea, and they had nowhere else to go, and they're moaning, they're groaning, they're complaining. We'll talk about that in a minute. And God parts the Red Sea, and they cross over, and they are saved from the Egyptians, because then God brings the waters back on the Egyptians, and he drowns the Egyptians, and Israelite is saved. But you understand that at this point, who was God to the Israelites? Now think about this for a second. He was the God of their ancestors. Read back through the Old Testament. Every time the Israel, or even into the New Testament, every time the Israelites or the Jewish people talk about who is God? Well, he is the God of Abraham and Jacob and Isaac and later on of David. And they list all these people of who he is the God of, because you know what? He was the God of their ancestors, especially at this point. Remember, they've been living in Egypt for a while. He was the God they prayed to. I mean, when they got to that Red Sea moment and they were there, it says that they cried out to God and they said, God, save us. And it says that they were crying out to God while they were in slavery, and God delivered us. So he was the God that they prayed to. Okay, let's talk about what it really was. He was the God that they asked things of. He was the God of their myths and legends. Now, before anybody starts throwing things at me for calling myths and legends, keep in mind where they are. Okay? They're reading stories about the past, about how God did all these things, and they're not even reading them. These stories are being passed down from generation to generation, being told, kind of like we tell our kids bedtime stories. And so a lot of the things that the Israelites knew about God kind of was how we do Little Red Riding Hood and Jack and the Beanstalk with our kids. They would sit down and tell them a story, and there's nothing wrong with storytelling, but the problem is at the point that they were being told these stories, when they heard about God, God was that guy that way back when Abraham was there, he came and walked amongst the fire, and God was that being that came and wrestled with Jacob. And God was that God that they tell us that flooded the world. And God was that, they were all stories. There was nothing personal about it. And I can't help but wonder, is this us? I mean, God is the God of my grandma or my mom or somebody that I grew up with. And God is the God that when I want something, my life isn't going so good. I go when I ask something from. And God is the God that I've heard all these wonderful stories. But the reality is, he was not the God that was active in their life at this point. 400 years they had been in slavery. 400 years they had been churning and making bricks. 400 years God had left them sitting there in Egypt, and they kept asking, God save us, God save us, and there was nothing. And remember where they're at. They're in Egypt. There's a God on every street corner. I mean, if it moved, walked, shined, smelled, or tasted, Egypt worshipped it. I mean, they worshipped everything. And so I can see very much how in this environment and growing up in this world, they had lost sight of who God was. So as they are leaving Egypt and they're headed toward the promised land, God needs to give them some lessons. And this is the first lesson, because as they're leading, they learn some very significant things about following God and seeing God. And I think it would be up to us to go and look at their story and figure out what is it in their story that maybe corresponds to my story and my inability to see God. And the first thing we see is God's path is not always the shortest. Exodus chapter 13, verse 17, when Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. Did God know these people or what? He's like, you know what? I can't take you from point A to point B on the shortest distance, because the trials and tribulations you've got to go through on that path, you're not ready for those. So we're going to have to go about in a roundabout way. And this is important for me to remember, because guess what? God is willing to move at the speed you can accept. God is not going to move faster than you're willing to accept it. God is not going to do things that you just can't grasp what he's doing in your life. God is going to be willing to slow it down and maybe go at a pace that you can go and go in a direction that isn't going to lead you in such a place that you're going to want to run from him. Now, here's the thing. We all want to see big things. But you know what? Sometimes seeing those big, amazing things requires us to have a little more faith than we have. Matthew chapter 17, verse 20, it says, he replied, because you have so little faith, truly I tell you, if you have the faith of as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. So the Israelites had to learn this. And I have to be honest with you. I have to learn this too, because this is humbling. This is. Because God says, if I have just a little, itty bitty, micro speck of faith, I can move mountains. And most of the time, my faith can't even move me. Most of the time, I get lost in my own moment. And so God has to teach us how to grow our faith. And so he has to kind of send us on these paths. And we have to remember that, well, God, he led them 24/7. I love this. After leaving Succoth, they camped at Etham on the edge of the desert. By day, the Lord went ahead of them with a pillar of a cloud to guide them on their way. And by night, a pillar of fire to give them light so they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night left its place in front of the people. Now, here's what I need you to see from this. When it comes to seeing God, God didn't put them on the path and say, I'll meet you there. He didn't hand them a map and a left turn, right turn set of directions and say, hey, look, you follow these directions, and when you get there, we'll hang out. It says that he took the journey with them. And he gave them two things to kind of take this journey. He gave them a pillar of cloud, and he gave them a pillar of fire. Now, these are amazing big things for them to look at, but you understand not only were they amazing big things for them to look at, he took care of the big thing and the little thing. Think about this for a second. They were traveling through desert area in the sun. So that meant that the pillar of cloud not only gave them a place that they could follow and see God, but it also would have done what with the sun? Blocked it out. So they are less hot. so they can travel by day in more of a comfort mode. So he's thinking about the big, can you see me? And the little, can you see what I'm doing for you? He also does this with the fire. The fire, definitely at night, you can see God and you can follow God. There he is. There's the fire. But you understand the fire also would light the path so they could see where they were going. So all of a sudden, they are working at an advantage because they can travel cool during the day and vision at night. So God is not just taking care of saying, here I am, follow me. He's giving them the means of which to follow. See, his intention was to lead them, not drive them. Where were the clouds put? Where were the pillars? In front. So that means that God did not get by behind them and go, shoo, shoo. My granny used to raise chickens, and I remember her trying to shoo those chickens in the chicken coop. And you go, shoo, and the chickens never went where they were. They were like all over the place, okay? And then she just kept shooing them, trying to get them into the little chicken coop. God doesn't work that way. He's not trying to shoo you to heaven, okay? He's not going to chase you to heaven to the point you decide to go his direction. It says he gets out in front of you, and he gives you a marker. He says, hey, look, if you want this relationship, your choice. You have to follow. You see, they had to learn how to move at the speed of God. So note the importance. God is willing to move at the speed of you, but he's going to teach you to learn to move at the speed of God. That's important because you know what? Sometimes those lessons where God is teaching me, well, honestly, I look at them, and God, this is a very confusing plan that you put out here. Exodus chapter 14, verse 1 through 4. Then the Lord said to Moses, tell the Israelites to turn back and encamp near Pi Haroth, between Migdol and the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around in the land and confused, hemmed in by the desert, and I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he will pursue them, but I will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army. And the Egyptian will know that I am the Lord. So the Israelites did this. And by the way, it should be 13, I believe, not 14. So you get what God is doing here. Do you like the term live bait? You realize that's what God's doing, right? He basically puts them out on the path, and he's letting them wander all over the place. So they're following the cloud, and the cloud is going this way, and they're going that way. And the cloud is going this way, and they're going that way. And they're following this cloud. Maybe they passed the same cactus a few times. Like, didn't we already see this cactus? And he's given the appearance that they're wandering wherever they're going. And what he's really trying to do, and this bothers me, he's trying to draw the enemy to them. God, can you just take care of my enemy while he's way over there in Egypt? Why you got to bring him to me? Well, God is trying to pull the Egyptians into a chase to pursue them. Isn't that amazing? God is literally using the people of God as live bait to draw out the enemy. Who's signing up for that one? I don't know. I don't know if I would like that. Now, he isn't telling them exactly what he's doing. He's just saying, hey, Moses, you tell them this is what I want you to do. And as they continue, this confusing plan ends in an absolute dead end. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up. And there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us out into the desert to die? What have you done to us bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians. Would it have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert? Tell me that doesn't sound like us. Doesn't that sound like us this year? We get out in the middle of the desert and God is leading us and we see him and we know he's there, but we want him to do something big and amazing and we just aren't willing to take the step by step. And so, you know, we become, I like this word, we become terrified. There's been a lot of fear in our world this year, hasn't it? And you know what? I think some of us have become terrified. We're scared. And you know why we're scared? We're scared because we have nowhere to go. I mean, on this side, we've got the coronavirus, and on this side, we've got social unrest, and then behind us, we've got the enemy of an election coming up, and in front of us, all we see is a murky, deep salty path forward. And I look around, I'm like, God, why on earth did you bring me here? I mean, wouldn't it have been better if you just left me where I was and killed me there and saved me all the walking? But as I began to sit and stare at the situation, I began to realize there were no good choices for these people. They got terrified because they had absolutely no good choices. I mean, what do you want? You want to go to the desert? And there you're going to probably die from the heat exhaustion. If you go to the mountains, you're probably not going to be able to scale them, and you're going to die because you're going to fall from the mountains. If you choose to go running off into the Red Sea, you're going to drown. And if you turn to go back to the Egyptians, they're going to probably kill you. There were no good choices, so they do what we usually do when we have no vision, when we can't see. They started focusing on the bad choices. And what were their choices? Well, we could either die, or maybe we could go and we could beg the Egyptians for forgiveness, and they'll be nice to us and take us back to Egypt and let us make bricks. Isn't that what they're saying? They're saying, Moses, we don't need this God thing. Yeah, the pillar was nice, the fire was nice, the cloud was nice, but it just led us to this point that now I have absolutely, positively nowhere to go. And you know what the problem is? They absolutely, positively missed seeing God. Exodus 14, verses 15 through 18. Then the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. When I gain glory through the Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And we know this story because God moves the pillar from leading the Israelites to behind the Israelites, because now he's going to protect them. And then he looks at Moses and he tells the Israelites, now I want you to see the order of things because it's important. All right? He tells Moses, tell the Israelites, move on. Now think about this. Where are they going to go? God is telling the Israelites before Moses ever raised the staff, before Moses ever went, before God blew on the wind, before he parted the Red Sea, he said, hey, look, move on. In other words, you start walking toward the sea, and I'll worry about the sea when you get there. How would you like to be the person selling that one? I mean, how would you like to be the person trying to sell a nation that had been caught in slavery for all these years, who had a God that they had been crying to for 400 years and didn't seem to do anything in their life? They just couldn't see God. And now Moses is saying, move, and God will take care of it when you get there. Now, I know what these people probably said. Moses, are you crazy? This God hasn't done anything for us. We just don't see God. And I think that's the point. They had to see God before they could see God. Now, play on the word, they had to get a vision for who God is before God would give them a vision of who God can be for them. Before God is going to do big, amazing things in their present, they have to be willing to see that God can do the little things in their life. That's hard. Because to see God, they couldn't focus on the desert. They couldn't focus on the mountains, the water, the enemy. And again, this is us. There's a lot going on in our world right now, isn't it? We focused on the virus. We focused on masks. We focused on our rights. We focused on the economy. We focused on social unrest. We focused on natural disasters as fires go out in California and hurricanes keep running up through the Gulf. We're focused on an election. We're focused. And you know what? It's no wonder we can't see God. We're focused on everything else. Here's a great question. In the middle of all of this, how many times have you gotten on your knees and just begged God, Lord, save us? How many times has God put something out in your path and said, do this, move on? And we're like, you know, God, but I want to be safe first. God didn't make it safe until they moved. That's incredible to me. God asked them to take a step of faith, and if they kept walking, they literally would have died. Man, these guys had to develop some faith before they ever saw that Red Sea part. You see, maybe the problem is we don't see the great cloud, and we need to know what happened to the bright light. Now, in case you're not quite familiar, the cloud I'm talking about is the one in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. The one where we're told that all of the testimonies of the people behind us are the people that we can step on to see, look at, see what God had done in our path. And that light, well, it's the light in Matthew chapter 5, verse 14, where it says, you are the light of the world. See, maybe the reason everything is wandering around, maybe the reason nobody can see God, is the cloud and the light have gone out. See, Acts chapter 1, verse 8, you knew we were going to get back here eventually, right? But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all of Judea and Samaria and the ends of the earth. And I gotta think about this for a second. I think maybe one of the reasons our world is wandering is because there is nobody out there leading them. The cloud that's supposed to lead them and the fire that's supposed to light their path, we're just not doing our job. We're out there and we're saying, oh my gosh, I'm as afraid as everybody else. I've got my issues too. I've got fear. But God says, you know what? Move on. Don't keep looking for a miracle. Just look for me in today. Don't keep asking me to part water, or in this case, pepper. Take me for who I am. Who am I? I am the God that had a vision for you. Here's how my vision went. I saw you lost in your sins. I saw there was no way that you could ever, ever, ever have a relationship with me. And this is not I, Barry. This is what God said. I decided to do something about it. Therefore, I came and gave my life on a cross for you. It's the biggest, greatest thing that has ever been done, because the story didn't end at the cross. On the third day, the stone rolled away, and I came walking out of that tomb. And folks, if you will just focus your vision on me, God, Jesus, stop looking for the big things and just move with me, then you know what? I'll be there for you. Things may get tight sometimes. You may see a desert and a mountain and an army and a sea. The question is, do you see God? Do you see that God made a promise? I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. Even when darkest days, I will always have some kind of escape path. Even if that escape is through death. You get it, right? God wants us to see Him. And if you're missing the vision, if you can't see Him, then you're just going to wander. I'm going to ask the worship team to make their way back up here. I'm going to try to move my mess without making a mess. Look at that. That's probably a bigger miracle than parting the pepper. And I want you to begin to think. In our world of chaos, in our year of chaos, I mean, 2020 is just, oh my gosh. Somebody said today that sometime tonight it's going to be 2020, 2020. Everything's a 20. I'm like, oh great, this is the point Jesus is coming back. Because I can't take very much more 2020 at this point, okay? But I think this has happened. 2020 has been a great year for the church because it's forced us to think differently. But 2020 has been a hard year because I think it's enabled us to take our focus off of God. So that's our challenge. Use this time, this song that we're going to sing, to decide for yourself. What am I focused on for the remainder of 2020? Because it ain't going to get much better from here. I got a feeling there's a lot more twists and turns coming in this year. But God wants to know, Are you looking at all the things around you? Are you going to focus on the sacrifice that's already been made for you? If you're here today and you've never accepted Christ, I'll be around following the service. I promise you. If I'm not around, there are elders and there are other people that would be more than happy to sit down and talk to you about what it means to be a Christian, what it means to be a follower of Christ. If you need somebody to pray with you, you've got things going on in your life, you know what? Let Bud know as you're leaving. He'll ask you to probably wait outside. I'll catch up with you as I'm coming out in the parking lot, and we'll have a time of prayer. Whatever you need, I want you to think about the idea. First step, see God for who he is. Would you please stand? We're going to pray, and then we're going to sing.